Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sanderlanch podcast, back from our break of, I'm back from my break. You guys had a new episode last week because I didn't edit the previous one in time. But for this episode, we read two more chapters. We're already done with them. There's some person who keeps commenting on our YouTube videos, be like, when are you guys going to start reading them? Like, they want videos that are us reading book.
But
like,
they want us to actually just read the chapters audiobook style?
I guess. And I'm like, I think that's illegal.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That will get us sued.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen. But we already read chapters 44 and 45 this week, wherein we get the flashback that Jamie's been waiting for. She's like, we got to be getting close to figuring out like what happened to Kaladin, how he ended up in the army and such. So we get that one. And then Shallan goes through some interesting stuff. We'll get into the details. But anyway, I'm Data, and with me today is
Joe
and Dak.
That's it. No, Jamie. Prior obligations. You know how it is. So
she sends her apologies.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, because like I said, this is the flashback she's been waiting for. So
yeah.
Did she even read it yet, or is she like not?
I think the last couple of weekends have just been that chaotic. She hasn't got around to it yet.
Yeah, see, there you go. So she still doesn't know.
So, yeah.
We know, though. So here we go. Hang on to something, everybody. The Sanderlanch is about to begin. So yes, we did two more chapters. There's only three of us today, and I have arrived back this week from my trip to Australia and New Zealand. So we're ready to get back into these things. I went and hung out with Dak and Jamie, and we did what stuff do we do? They set up a boat tour for us of the Sydney Harbour. That was cool.
Yep, that was fun. We had like, you know, it came with the charcuterie platter and drinks and everything, so that was nice.
Yeah,
we did the Sydney Aquarium. Just
oh yeah, that's right.
We wanted to take we've been waiting to take our daughter to see the dugong for ages, and we was like, all right, let's, you know, two birds, one stone.
We saw sharks and all sorts of fun stuff. Penguins, pretty close to penguins.
Then we did that escape room, which
oh yeah, the Harry Potter escape room, that was great.
Yeah,
just a bunch of random fun stuff in Sydney. Did I ever talk about on the show like why I wanted to go to Australia?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, I'm not gonna say fun story, but I'll tell it since, you know, Jamie's not here. We probably fill a little extra time.
Oh, this story's sad.
Yeah, so when Joe and I have like several cousins on our dad's side, and they're all older than us. So when we were kids, I would see my grandparents like take them on these amazing trips. Like they went to Italy and Spain and all this stuff, and it was just like, oh okay. And then when I was 13 or 14, right around there, my grandparents were like, okay, we think that you're old enough to like start traveling, to learn about traveling now. And I never realized it was like an age thing. I just thought, oh, that's the kind of stuff they do with, you know, with our cousins. But I guess they were waiting for the right time. So they're like, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would you want to go? And I'd never even considered like taking a trip like that. So it wasn't something I thought about. And yet still, like, without missing a beat, I had the answer. I was like, I want to go to Las Vegas. And they're like, wait, what? Like, yeah, Las Vegas.
As a 13 or 14 year old.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, this would have been probably 99, maybe 98, right after Star Trek The Experience opened in Las Vegas. And there was ads for it. I think on the VHS for Star Trek First Contact, there were ads for Star Trek The Experience. And I was just enamored of this. I was like, I got to go. I want to go. And so I don't remember if I actually told them that was the reason. I was just like, I want to go to Las Vegas. And they were like, I don't think you're understanding what we're saying here. Like, anywhere in the world. I'm like, no, yeah, I get it. Las Vegas. Like, we're not taking you to Las Vegas. If you could go to a different country, where would you want to go?
We'll take you anywhere you want to go. Las Vegas, anywhere else you want to go.
Not that. So, I mean, disappointed. I never did get to Star Trek The Experience before it closed in like 2008. So that's always something that I regret. But anyway, I thought about it and I was like, okay, if I could go anywhere, where would I want to go? And I was like, I want to go somewhere far away and interesting, but preferably where they speak English so I can understand what's going on. So that's how I came. I was like, Australia. And my grandparents were like, oh, that's interesting. We've actually never been to Australia. That could be great. So they said, here's what we'll do. We'll go, because they don't want to take a kid anywhere that they haven't experienced so that, you know, they know their way around and such. So they're like, we'll go this next year and check it out. And if we think that it would make a good first trip for you, then we'll take you the next year. It's like, great. And so they went and they came back and they're like, oh, no, yeah, this will be great. So we'll take you next year. And that was the next year was going to be the year that Sydney had the Olympics. And I was like, oh my gosh,
oh, wow, okay.
Maybe go to like an Olympic event. So yeah, that would have been 2000. So this would have been 98, 99 when this started. So they're like, oh, I don't know. Like maybe it turns out the Olympics were like right in the middle of the school year. So probably not, but they're like, well, we're going to take you to Australia next year. And then a few months later, our grandfather goes in for his annual checkup and they discover that he has cancer. And 3 months later he was gone. So
oh, fuck.
Yeah.
It was pretty rough.
It was very rough. And, as a consequence, among many consequences, like I never got to go on a trip with them internationally or anything. So,
yeah.
Ever since then, I'm like, one of these days,
neither did I.
I'm going to make that trip one of these days. And so when I got this, I saw a good deal on this cruise. I was like, OK, this is it. I'm doing it. Even if it's not it wasn't the best time financially for me to be paying for that. But I was just like, this is my chance to do like for 20 years. I've been intending to do this at some point. Here we go.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, yep, did that. Had a great time. Lots of interesting things seen. And the only downside was that our bit to Tasmania got canceled because of a dock worker strike there, which apparently got resolved like the day that we were supposed to get there.
Fucking course it did.
Yeah, right. So that was the one disappointment. But otherwise, great time. So that's that story. Just completely random at the start of the episode. Story, but I mean, you know, I had to address the elephant in the room of we were gone for 2 weeks, so that was as good a way as any.
It was a good time, and like now officially you have met all the other people on this podcast.
It's true,
and you're the only one who has in person.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Even the little one, like we hear her in the podcast sometimes. She counts. So
yep, met her yep, too. That's true.
Okay. But let's get into the actual content of what we're trying to do here. So we read The Weeping and Shadesmar this time. Two chapters. What did you guys think of these two chapters?
Boy, did we read them. You know, they're chapters. The flashback, it makes a lot of sense. What, you know, we get to find out finally kind of what sets up Kaladin to go into the military. There was a lot of will he, won't he before this, and It's finally very apparent what happened. He had a Hunger Games situation, but they wouldn't let him do the Hunger Games. So he decided that he would just go also to the Hunger Games. So that was, you know, it makes sense story-wise for that to have occurred. Still kind of sad because we know, you know, his brother probably doesn't. We don't know all the details, but his brother probably doesn't make it. So that is pretty crushing to find out, like, this is kind of how that happened, and this is why Kaladin's, like, kind of on the path he's on now. We still don't know, you know, the ins and outs of, like, why he's in the specific position he's in now. What did he do to upset the Bright Lords? But we know, you know, why he and Tien were in the situations that they're in. So it was good to finally get that piece. Mm-hmm. His father seemed very bereft, which makes sense. And so we got that, and then the second chapter, we get Shallan, and man, some weird shit goes down, and I don't know really what to say about it, except that it excites me, because, you know, something's actually happening now. And there's a lot of, like, decisions that she made in this chapter that you're like, wait, is she gonna follow through on these decisions? Because, like, what's happened now? She's now somehow used the Fabriel. Doesn't sound like she understands how she used it. She wasn't even wearing it, which I think they may have said that in a previous chapter, that you don't even have to wear it to use it. Maybe I'm misremembering that. And so She's seeing these things that surround her. She's got some kind of something talking to her. So lots of wild stuff going on. So if anything, I'm hoping that this is the beginning of kind of like the progression of the Sanderlanch. Maybe it's slowly getting into motion. That would be fantastic.
I think the part you're thinking of earlier is that it said like when you get experience with it, you can use it better. Like that was when Yasna like used it to shoot beams at the guys running off and turn them into smoke. And Shallan was like, oh, I thought you had to be touching a thing to do it. I don't think we've ever seen someone or heard about someone using it without actually wearing it before.
So. You're probably right. That probably is what I'm thinking of.
I do like that you brought up the, because totally it is trying to feel like a Hunger Games moment where it's like, I volunteer as tribute instead. And then the guy's just like,
yeah,
no,
and Rashawn's like, you can't, I make the decision. He's like, okay, fine. Then can I also go so that, you know, I can watch out for him?
I was like, does one of those other two kids who got drafted get to be undrafted since you got another guy? But I guess not.
Yeah. No, because he's taking him as a volunteer. So he's like, I don't care. You're getting drafted. He's like, if you want to be, we could always use another.
Yep. So, yeah, it's definitely this feels like what we've been building towards with this mystery in the Kaladin flashbacks. So we got kind of hit a big spot. I mean, that's one of the mysteries. There's more mysterious stuff about what happened in Kaladin's past, but his childhood flashbacks seem to have been building to this.
It's still a mystery.
Did it take you out of it less, given that we only read two chapters and it was like, so it's almost like the flashback is totally separate and before the current text stuff?
I mean, this flashback at least feels like it's drawing towards the end of their time in Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, it's just like, okay, well, we're now like about to move past this.
We're making progress.
Right.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'll admit, when I finished the end of the flashback chapter, I was kind of just like, really, that's it? And maybe that's disingenuous because it is, you know, pretty bad. It's like, the peaceful young son is being drafted to war, and so the older brother has to like, oh god, I gotta go and protect him. And we know that's where that's gonna lead for Tien, but I was just kind of like, really, like the revenge was getting him drafted. Just, I guess it wasn't quite as dramatic as I expected it, but everything makes sense within the context of the world. I think I just expected something a bit bloodier, which might be unfair of me. So yeah, that was okay. Maybe it's also how many chapters we spent building to like this thing that forced Kaladin into the army, and it turned out to be, oh yeah, Hunger Games. Let's go. So yeah, so that was a chapter. It's another flashback. We'll see where it goes from here. I guess eventually we'll probably also see how Tien dies. I mean, I would assume maybe, but yeah, it was definitely the Shallan chapter that was interesting this time because what the actual fuck is going on there?
That pretty much sums it up, right? Like, what the actual fuck is going on here?
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, so she's still angsting. She talks to Cabsal a bit. Cabsal really seems to want to get into her pants, and then she uses it, and the things show up. It's kind of those. It's like, oh, if I'm gonna watch the movie The Thing, and I'll come up with a better name for that monster. And then they watch it. Nope, that was definitely a thing. So that's what I'm getting with like these things, like this, like peering out of the void and just looking at Shallan, just going, what is this? What is this one doing? And she's like, what the fuck? And then she damn cuts herself and is trying to cover it up and passes out from blood loss and everything. I was like, okay, this escalated. This went from 0 to 100 pretty quick.
Yeah, and it's a hell of a plan that she comes up with in the very few moments she has.
Yeah. It's like, all right, desperation's made us do something, but Jesus.
Also, as you pointed out, we get some Cabsal moments in that chapter that, once again, I'm going to regret Jamie not being here to talk about how much he hates Cabsal, but he I don't know. I was going to say maybe he deserves it in this section, but I don't know.
Yeah, he seems a bit, yeah, he's rubbing me more and more the wrong way the more he shows up, so I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like, We finally get the answer to Kaladin, what happened to drive him into the army. But the really interesting stuff is the whatever the hell is going on over there. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, she's got like voices talking to her from outside the veil or whatever, and like the spiral headed dudes are showing up again. It's like, okay, yeah, what the what from the bottom of my heart, the fuck.
And it's it's not the first time that we've heard a voice. The last time she just wrote it off as like, oh, it must have been the maid, I guess, except it didn't really sound like it was coming out from out there, but whatever. So
yeah,
I'm trying to see. There's pictures of. I was going to share with you guys some of the leather bound art. I shared with you guys some before, but that this couldn't spoil anything for you. So let me see if there's something we can add here.
Yeah, the Word of Radiance Leatherbound campaign starts soon, doesn't it?
It does. I'm excited. I'm ready. Did I show you guys the one of her drawing Teravangian?
I think you might have, but, you know,
we can see it again. That was a while ago.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I was actually able to get a 2023 Dragonsteel shirt. I guess they found some or something. I don't know.
Nice.
Let's take a look at this. What do we got? Yeah. You definitely Ooh. Sent us this. I remember this image.
It's got like the pattern of lines in the back that she like mysteriously draws in there. So since those things come up again in this section, I thought that was
Stormheads. That's what we can call them. The Stormheads.
The Stormheads.
I mean, those patterns of lines look like they're pretty stormy.
And I think there's another picture of one of her drawings that includes those. There's another one of the. I think this one may come from this section where she's like looking up and she draws what she sees and then like they're popping into it. But you can see all the things that she's describing, like the weird heads, the weird stiff collars, and what have you.
It just looks like the nobility class looking down on the peasants. It's like, what are you looking at?
Yeah. Do you smell them? Yes. They smell terrible.
We should wash them away.
Anyway, let's get into these chapters. Let's do this thing. So we find out a little bit more world building about like the weather in this world. We have the Weeping, which is the title of this chapter. At the end of the year, or so it's like right around New Year's, there's 4 weeks where it just rains. There's no high storms, just rain. And Kaladin does not like this time of year. He's feeling real down. He's got it really comes across to me as like seasonal affective disorder is what it's called, where people get like depressed during the winter when, you know, the days are shorter and it's dark and gloomy. Like that's the way this comes across to me. But he's sitting up on the roof in the rain because he's tarring the roof or whatever to prevent the leaks. Because 4 weeks of straight rain, that's a lot of water leaking into your house if you've got a leak in your roof.
It's like Groundhog Day. 6 more weeks of winter. Ah, shit.
Well, but that's the weird thing is we found out that like seasons here work weird. Seasons come and go unpredictably and they last like a couple weeks or whatever. This is predictable. And he says there's no high storms during these weeks except for one right in the middle. And I feel like I may be wrong, but I feel like I've in reading about like the calendar and stuff of how the world works. I think it may be every other year that they have one in the middle. Like they'll have no high storm at all, and then every other year they have one. Maybe I'm making that up, but I think that's right. Haven't seen much of Rishon since the White Spine Hunt and the death of his son.
Well, he's probably got to learn to walk again, yeah?
Yeah, right. And here comes Tien. He's like, hey, Kaladin, what are you doing? And they get into a conversation, and Tien has become an apprentice carpenter, but apparently not real great at it. And it's not that he can't carve wood. He brings out this like little toy horse that he made that is super intricate and beautiful, and that's just not what he was supposed to be making. He was supposed to be making like a chair.
I will admit that if you had told me Tien was going to be apprenticed as any kind of craftsman or tradesman, I was going for stonemason. I would not have picked carpenter.
Interesting.
Well, dude loves rocks.
But he likes the I was about to say, but he likes the rocks. He didn't want to break them.
Well, no, but he might be interested in seeing what you could do with them. I mean, you'd probably be in the same position, like he's just carving like fascinating little shapes rather than, you know, bricks or something.
Right.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, being able to like carve like small, intricate things, there's probably a good market for that. It's just that this particular carpenter that he's apprenticed to, that's not his thing. And he doesn't look well upon that. Like in a bigger city where people had money to spend on that sort of thing, I bet that you could make a decent living if you were good at that. Here, not so much. And he's like the carpenter's third apprentice, too. It's like the carpenter didn't really need another apprentice, but they had to find somewhere to put Tien. He he like can't stand the sight of blood, so he wasn't going to be able to apprentice as a surgeon. And somehow, like, Tien manages to cheer Kaladin up, just like he always seems to be able to. And then it comes out that Father spent another one of the spheres. And Kaladin feels like Roshon is winning. He's wearing us down. And then their mom comes up, and Tien's like, oh, yeah, Kaladin's worried about the spheres. And his mom reveals the intricate plot that...
Oh, what a plot. What a plot, yeah, this is.
They're intentionally spending the spheres a little bit at a time to make Roshon think that they're on the verge of breaking, when really in 2 months Kaladin will be old enough to apprentice and they will send him off with the money and it'll be too late. But apparently things have gotten even worse for them here. Not only are people not paying for healing anymore, but they won't even hire Kaladin's mom to like do her creme cleaning job that she was doing. And even when they do use a sphere to buy stuff, they don't get a good price on anything. He says vegetables at 10 times the regular price, moldy grain at double. So the people in this town are really just increasing in their assholitude. It's kind of sad.
Assholitude. Is that in the dictionary? Or
it is now. They did now.
I quite like whore baggery as an nice alternate term.
Okay, I'll go with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we'll keep spending the spheres to make him think he's winning. I mean, we don't really need to. My family's offered us supplies, but we got to let him think he's winning. And then you'll be off and the spheres will be safely in the hands of the Ardents to use as a stipend during your years of study. And she also mentions that it's like, you don't have to be a surgeon if you don't want. We're sending you off to like Carbaranth to learn, but you can learn math or history or politics, tactics, whatever you want to learn.
It really does seem like they're hammering into, you can be literally anything you want except a soldier.
It does seem a little bit like that, right? Although, really, to me, it seems weird. His dad has never given any indication that anything but a surgeon will do. And his mom's like, look, me and your dad just want you to know that you can choose. And I'm like, does his dad really want him to know that? Like, or is this you?
Good point.
And she mentions that, you know, the world is changing. Maybe they'll even teach men to read soon. I've got letters about these amazing fabrials, like pens that can ride across great distances. So this was 5 years before the current time, and this was a new technology that they're just hearing about. And then 5 years later, it seems pretty common.
Well, I guess it's like when mobile phones sort of took the world by storm in the mid-2000s.
Mm. Although they'd been around, you could have a mobile phone like back in the 80s. It was just like big.
Those big brick phones, yeah.
Yeah.
But my question here was, okay, so he can study maths, but he can't read. So how does maths work without writing it down? You know, I'm not a math person. I don't know, but
maybe
I assume
numbers are okay.
That's still writing though, and still reading. I don't know. That's it. Just when she said you can study maths, I'm like, how the fuck's he gonna do that without being able to write anything down?
I think she does mention it's like you could become an Ardent and they're allowed to like read and do whatever they want, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or be a Storm Warden. He's like, wait, no, Storm Wardens, they seek to predict the future. Like, no, it's not really the same thing.
That's a really awesome name for a weatherman.
Right? Yeah. When your main job is predicting like the giant storm, I guess it makes sense.
Coming to you live at 9 p.m., the Storm Warden gives us the weather.
Yeah, I'm going to start that news network where everything is just named super dramatically. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what would you call a newsreader?
An anchorsmith?
There's got to be something where it's like, you got to, like, there, you can put urgency into it in some way.
Where it's like, media? Media
events master?
Ooh, event master. I don't know if that fits exactly, but I like the direction that goes.
Yeah, master seems like a good way to put into it.
Ooh, what about news maestro?
Ooh, a maestro.
He's a maester.
I like it.
Yeah, okay. I'm not gonna sit here thinking about it more. I can think about this all day, trying to come up with crazy names. And anyway, at the end of the conversation, Kaladin's dad shows up. He's like, "Why are you all sitting on the roof in the rain?" And Kaladin's mom says, "We're feasting." On what? On irregularity, dear. He's like, dear, you can be very odd, you know? Yeah, I just said that, right? There's a big gathering in the square, so okay, we all got to go off to the gathering. Roshon has had his man gather the entire town for a full town meeting. And like Calvin's like, in the rain, come on, couldn't even waited for light day. And so it turns out that High Lord Amaram has come to town. He is Rishon's distant cousin. And so he's been visiting Rishon, who now has a peg leg on his right leg. So he did end up losing at least some of his leg.
And he wanted to be a pirate, but it didn't work out for him.
Yar, I'm Rishon. He should have gone to the Pure Lake.
Yeah, should have.
Yeah, you can be whatever you want to be.
Yeah,
the Pure Lake pirate.
I want a whole novella just about the Pure Lake.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that.
I'd be down.
But here we see High Marshal Amaram in his green formal military uniform. Kaladin's like, okay, this guy looks impressive. And then Laurel shows up, and she has a wedding prayer on her sleeve, a bride's prayer. So it turns out that she's getting married, but not to Relir, to Rishon himself, this much older man.
Well, Relir's dead. What are you going to do?
His dad's like, yeah, it looks like Rishon was not willing to part with the connections that she offers. Now Kaladin's like, no, we have to do something. And he's like, no. That is literally none of our business.
Also, after the way she treated you, why do you care?
Right?
Yeah. He still finds her attractive, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, this is the first time I feel like we've seen him being like, oh my gosh, she's like so hot. As opposed to like when they were actually friends and he's like, why is she acting so weird? Like, girls are strange. But here he sees her and he's just like, oh wow. She's got, some might find that dark hair sprinkled with foreigner blonde to be unappealing. But to Kaladin, it was alluring. Which, if you'll remember, is also a thing that Adolin has. He's got, like, some of that blonde popping out in his hair.
He's got the frosted tips. He's going to start listening to Smash Mouth.
Dude, maybe he already does.
You don't know.
Guy's not an all-star anymore.
And, oh, I forgot about that. That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, he died last year.
So Amaram's here. He's like, okay, I'm here to recruit for the army. The king took most of our armies with him on his quest to fulfill the Vengeance Pact. But so my forces are undermanned, and we have to take some young people from your town. And so Jost, who we'd met before, he's like, I'll go, and a couple other people. But Kaladin finds it kind of strange. Like, these guys have spent their whole lives talking about how they want to go off and to war and become heroes or whatever. And now that the opportunity arises, everyone's kind of like, I don't think I want to do that. And so when he doesn't get enough people volunteering, we have to go to the list. As city lord, Rishon has the duty and honor of deciding which men to send when the draft is basically happening.
Yes, this seems like a fair and balanced system that can't in any way backfire.
Right. And so he says, read the first four names on the list and the last one. Because he's got special spot reserved just for that last one. And Liren's over here like, no, he can't send me or you. I was a surgeon, and you was my only apprentice. We provide an essential function to the town. So by law, we're exempt from conscription. And he did not see.
Soon as he said that, I'm just like, well, guess where this is going.
Right, exactly. I'm surprised that he didn't see it coming. So yeah, we get four people that we don't know, and Tien, son of Liren. And everyone's just like, Tien's just like, wait, what? Me? Go to the military? Like, Rishon is just up here grinning as the whole family is like, wait, no.
Rishon is just like, yar, har, 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 har. He's got his pirate laugh going.
Yar, I can't believe I'm going to get away with this.
And so Tien is 13, and Liren tries to say that's too young. And Amaram's like, in the cities, youths as young as 8 and 9 are accepted into the military. Which, how fucked up is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great. Let's unpack.
And Liren's like, no, those are light-eyed sons that you take them and train them as officers at that age. They're not sent into battle. And Amaram's like, oh, crap, you're the surgeon. I've heard about this. Can we please not do this? Like,
I don't want to be involved in these politics.
Can you leave your petty bullshit out of this? And Rishon's like, no, it's my choice.
Yarr!
I send those the town can spare. Well, that boy is the first one we can spare.
Yeah, I'll spare him to an early grave, the sea dog.
Amaram's just like, oh man, this argument is getting away from my valuable rum drinking time.
Yeah.
Rishon ends by being like, ha, you've hid behind the law and sneered at me. Well, now it turns against you. Keep the spheres. The look on your face at this moment is worth the price of every one of them.
Something tells me Rishon is not economically sound.
Right? Yeah. he's super petty. That's what we've I don't think that this comes as any shock.
Yeah. As if there wasn't already enough proof, it's like, man, no wonder you got assigned to the backwater town to look after.
Right. You're garbage, dude. So Amaran promises that he'll make Tien a runner boy for a year or two, not in combat right away. So that's the best I can do. Sorry.
It does seem like Amaran's not a completely shit guy.
It does seem that way.
Yeah.
So far.
I mean, he didn't have to say that. There's no reason for him. Like, but he's like, no, you know what? I'll try.
Yeah, he's like, all right, yeah, you're in a shit situation. I know my cousin's kind of a dick, so you probably don't deserve what he's doing to you. So I'll do what I can. I'm not going to go to any effort, but I'll make some arrangements.
Yeah. But apparently it's like a 4-year bid in the military. And so if Tien's a runner boy for the first two, then that's like half his time. That's not bad. And so, the family is kind of dumbstruck here as Amaram's like, okay, everyone go. You can bring 2 changes of clothes and up to 3 stone weights of other possessions. They will be weighed. Don't bring too much shit.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Tien's just going to rock up with a bag of rocks. And it's like, yep. We didn't mean stone weight literally.
I mean, if that's what you want, whatever, dude. Just come on.
Whatever. Get in the wagon.
And Kaladin at the last second is like, This is my time. This is where I need to be a man. And so he's, Bright Lord Amaram, can I take my brother's place? And Roshon jumps, like, has already gotten back in his carriage. He's like, no, not allowed. The law says I choose. And Amaram's like, oh, no, he's right.
I mean, he is an asshole. He's not wrong. He's just an asshole.
And so Kaladin's like, okay, but can I join up also then? And I can, like, protect him that way. And Amaram's like, well, I mean, yeah, I'll take any soldier who wants to join. And mom and dad are not happy about this. Like, no, don't both of you go. And Liren is just like, why would you do this? Why have you done this to me after all of our plans? His dad says, which is, that's one way to put it, I guess, my man. I might have been a little bit.
Yeah, that seemed a bit just, this is not about you at this point anymore, man.
Yeah, your sons are going off to maybe die. And you're like, how could you do this to me?
All my plans. You foiled them.
Foiled again.
How dare you try and protect your brother?
Yeah, I was just consigned to let him die.
Tien, on the other hand, is like hugging Kaladin's arm. It's like, thank you, Kaladin.
Yeah, it's like Liren should have really just looked at Tien in that moment, just gone, all right, I'm gonna keep my mouth shut because,
yeah.
I don't agree with what's going on, but Jesus, look at your son, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on. And Kaladin ends the chapter. He says, I promise in 4 years, I will bring him home safely. I promise it by the storms and the Almighty's 10th name itself. I will bring him back. I guess we don't know for sure that doesn't happen, but it seems unlikely given what we do know. It's possible Tien dies after the 4 years and he comes back home and dies. But
yeah.
Doesn't seem probable. Also, before we leave this chapter behind, I do have to say one thing that I kind of skirted over. I don't know if you guys kind of noticed, but the rain spren are freaking weird. Like, maybe the creepiest spren that we've heard described so far.
I don't remember that description.
Yeah, sounds like Data's scared. Scared of the rain spren.
It's easy to gloss over, and I kind of glossed over it as going back over everything just now. But it does take, like, a whole... Let me see if I can find it again. A whole section to describe what they look like, and it's creepy. Yeah, here we go. So, Rain spren, as they approach the meeting, is when it describes them. They pass rain spren standing in puddles, glowing with a faint blue light, shaped like ankle-high melting candles with no flame. They rarely appear except during the weeping. They were said to be the souls of raindrops, glowing blue rods seeming to melt, but never growing smaller, a single blue eye at their top.
I mean, they're only ankle-high. You can punt those things away.
I don't know. Can you even touch spren? I don't know that we've established that you can.
Has anyone tried?
It's like a bunch of glowy, melting candles with an eyeball on top is just so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super fun. What are you talking about?
I mean, all they're really doing is just standing there.
Yeah. Watching you.
How is that different from your regular life? You're just standing there and people are watching you.
Yeah.
It sounds like a regular day at the bus stop.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
How many people really watch you on a given day? Most people are too busy with their own shit to worry about you.
I guess that's true. I don't know. I'm pretty interesting.
Can't speak for anyone else, but I'm pretty interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I make lots of weird noises and stuff.
Many leather-bound books.
Yeah.
That was the weeping chapter, and the next one is called Shadesmar, which I don't think that we get any explanation of what the hell that means in this chapter, now that I think about it.
That sounds familiar from somewhere. Was that in Sacred History?
That is an excellent question, and I'm pretty sure you have heard that before. Let's find out real quick.
Let's take a digression to find the answer.
Let us digress.
We need, like, the harp music. Except better than that.
Once upon a time, back in the year 2020.
No, we hit Sacred History in 21.
All right, well, thanks for shitting on that.
Okay, so it appears in one section of Arcanum Unbounded that we've read, the Dromenad System essay, which is the planet where Sixth of Dusk takes place.
Oh.
The section says, mostly this is due to the fact that travel on and off of planets, at least in the physical realm, is dependent upon perpendicularities, places where a person can transition from Shadesmar onto the planet itself.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, it does come up several times in The Lost Metal. Melon, when she's talking about her new mission, she goes, I get to cross the misted unknown, the dark vastness that Harmony calls Shadesmar.
Right.
So yes, like, that's right.
Shadesmar is also where the army comes from that is coming to, like, move into their dimension.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay, anyway. So, yes, it has come up a little bit. And that is the name of this chapter, although what that means in terms of this chapter. The epigraph says, Yelignar, called Blightwind, was one that could speak like a man, though often his voice was accompanied by the wails of those he consumed. That's dramatic. All right.
Ominous.
The note, presumably Yasna's note, since the other one seemed to have come from her, says the unmade were obviously fabrications of folklore. Now, curiously, most were not considered individuals, but personifications of kinds of destruction. This particular quote or source, she says she doubts its authenticity. And meanwhile, for Shallan's scholarship, we have gone back to researching King Gavilar and how he met the Parshendi and such, which we touched on before. The Parshmen promise they'll lead me in a hunt for a great-shelled beast they call Ulomasvara, which my scholars translate as Monster of the Chasms. Very dramatic name. And presumably
Monster Reborn!
Presumably that is the Chasm Fiends that we've met already.
Sure. So
we get some talk about how the Parshendi are different from regular Parshmen. May not even be the same race. The skin patterns are similar, but the colors can be kind of different also. The Parshendi have seen our servants and are confused by them. Where is their music? Clade will often ask me. I don't know what he means by that, but really, I find this part interesting because we don't know hardly anything about the Parshendi at this point. We haven't, like, talked to any of them. We've fought them, and that's about all. So even these few little quotes from one seem interesting to me. And I, like, they were concerned that their Parshmen might see the Parshendi and, like, start emulating them. But it hasn't happened, so that's probably good. The Parshendi have an uncanny ability to make music together. I swear I have left one singing to himself and soon passed another out of earshot, yet singing the same song eerily near to the other in tempo, tune, and lyric. Which just makes it sound like, you know, they're all like Taylor Swift fans, and so they're all always just singing this Taylor Swift song or whatever. That was the first one to pop in my head, because Taylor Swift is coming to Sydney and causing some problems for Dac and the bus line soon. But
it was more than that, because the weekend before we were down in Melbourne and the city there was overrun with Swifties as well. So it's kind of like two weekends in a row. I'm just like, it's like, oh my God, Taylor Swift is just all over the place, which like, I don't mind. Like, I'm not a fan of Taylor Swift's music, but you know, I don't have anything against her.
Right.
And I'd be foolish to you know, be snide about what she's accomplished, because it's far more than I ever will.
No joke, yeah.
And she seems to have done it without becoming a shit person, which a lot of them do, so, you know, hats off to that.
Yeah, so that's why I randomly picked her out of a hat for the music that... But now everyone imagine that it's just like, all the Parshendi are constantly singing Taylor Swift songs.
I mean, that's basically just like South Park. The crab people got a hold of the Taylor Swift stuff, and now the crab people are all just singing... the only one of her songs I can name off the top of my head is Shake It Off.
Yeah. Shake It Off, Blank Space,
you know.
Bad Blood, was that one?
Yes.
Okay.
Mariska Hargitay was in the music video for that one.
I don't know who that is.
Law and Order SVU.
Okay.
Their favorite instrument is the drum. It matches the simple buildings which they construct of creme and stone. They build them in the crater-like formations on the edge of the shattered plains. So we know that the 10 armies have settled into crater-like formations on the edge of the shattered plains. So they have just taken over the cities that used to belong to the Parshendi. And so Shallan is still reading about King Gavilar and the stuff leading up to his murder and still not sure like what she can bring to the table here. One of the books that she's reading is King Gavilar: A Biography, published by Gavilar's widow, Navani, 2 years earlier.
It's funny because I know his name is Colin, but when you said King Gavilar and you were talking about the title of the book and then you said colon, I was like, oh man, this book title's got a colon in it, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to be saying it Colin, and that would sound slightly differently, but I don't.
I am the Lord Master of Cologne. You mean colon. State your business.
So Gavilar was not a scholarly fellow. He didn't have a single scholarly finger on his left hand, she says. And so Shallan's like, but so wait, why was he interested in the Parshendi? Because according to this account, like, he got really interested in their language, their society, their music. Why, if he was not a scholar? And Yasna's like, yeah, I've wondered about that too. Sometimes people change. And when he came back, I was encouraged by his interest. We spent a lot of evenings talking about his discoveries. One of the few times I felt like I really connected with my father.
Dude just really like crabs.
Maybe. I mean, in this world, you gotta like crabs.
Yeah. Fruit. I mean, whether you like them or not, they're here to stay.
Yep. And this is where Shallan finally... Exactly. Crabati. This is where Shallan finally just comes out and says it, like, why do you have me doing this? Because you already know everything that I find. And yes, it's like, a fresh perspective can help. Maybe you'll notice details that I've missed. A few people have noticed the discrepancy you just did, although many do note his later changes once he returned to Kolinar. So we've been told repeatedly that Gavilar was becoming a different guy, like, towards the end of his life. So this seems to support that. And then we get into the discussion, which we've brought up before. Like, what exactly is the difference between a historian and what Yasna says, I'm a Veristitalian. Sorry. We search for answers in the past, reconstructing what truly happened. Because to many, writing history is not about truth, but about presenting the most flattering picture of themselves and their mode. So they try to reconstruct what actually happened. Which does sound to me like just researching history, but apparently history works differently there, or maybe they're acknowledging that there's a bias to whenever histories are written, and she's trying to get around that.
I mean, that bias exists in our world too.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually exactly like our history.
But modern day historians would claim probably that they were more of what Yasna is doing, where it's like, I'm trying to discover what actually happened.
True.
But in this world, apparently, this is a weird thing that, like, oh yeah, we're this like small sect of historians. And so Shallan's thinking, well, then why are you looking for tales about like folk tales and evil spirits and shit? Like, that doesn't fit. Tozbeck's ship is coming tomorrow morning, and she's going to be leaving. She hasn't said anything to Yasna yet. So how she's going to explain this is, I guess we kind of, maybe we have an idea now. But she's like, I don't have much time left. I'm going to come out and start being a little bolder. What is Urithiru? And Yasna just answers. She's like, oh yeah, it was said to be the center of the Silver Kingdoms, a city that held 10 thrones, one for each king, the most majestic and important city in all the world. And Shallan's like, really? Why haven't I heard of it? Oh, it was abandoned even before the Lost Radiance turned against mankind. Most scholars consider it just a myth. Many of the classical works have only survived in pieces. The single complete work we have from the early years is The Way of Kings, which, hey, that's the title of this book and the other book that we've seen multiple times. So apparently
I'm reading it right now.
One of the oldest full texts that they have.
It's going to be like all those Roald Dahl books where we get to the end. And it's like, and they did complete writing this book. It's the book you just finished reading.
Right, exactly. Although we've heard a couple clips from The Way of Kings as this book has progressed. It doesn't sound like the book that we're reading.
I don't know. Like, we thought the same thing about Final Empire, and then we reread that text a bit.
Okay, fair point. Shallan proposes maybe somewhere in Natanatan is the city, and Yasna's like, no, it's not. Good guess, but no. And then she's like, well, what about the Voidbringers? What's up with those? You asked Dalinar about those. And Yasna's like, well, I mean, nobody knows for sure. Most scholars consider them myths. Theologians accept them as counterparts of the Almighty, monsters that dwelled in the hearts of men. And she's like, yeah, okay, go back to your studies. Maybe we'll talk about this another time. I'm done with you for right now. And then Shallan makes an excuse for why she has to go down and look for a book. But really, she's planning to do some other stuff. I mean, she's going to go down into the books, but just not after the one that she claimed to be. 2 hours later, she's on one of these lower levels looking through stuff about the Voidbringers. Because this is what Yasna's studying, so she's going to try to figure out why. And really, she can't find much. Like, everyone has something to say about them that is all, like, contradictory, weird stuff. Studying this is like trying to determine if Deathspren were real or not. What was the point? And here comes Cab Sol.
This guy.
He talked to Yasna, yeah. Found out what book that Shallan was after, and then went down to find her, which a little bit creepy, maybe.
Yeah, dude, why don't you back off?
Okay.
Also, the fuck's he doing talking to Yasna? She don't like him. I mean, she surely doesn't like him hanging around her ward.
Yeah, probably not.
And this is tying into my theory that he's a plant by her.
Yeah. That would explain why Yasna's willing to give him information when she doesn't like him.
Yeah. Mm. I don't like you, but I want to talk to your ward. Oh, okay, she's down looking for this book. Yeah, bullshit.
And she lies about what she's doing down here twice, and then doesn't actually tell him the truth after he calls her out on both her lies. She's like, oh, come on, let's hurry up so I don't have to lie to Yasna too. And so she's like, hey, you're a priest. What's up with the Voidbringers? He actually says that I sat up there with your disapproving mistress for well over an hour. So his claim the whole time has been that he's tried to convert Yasna. But now he says that he sat up there waiting for Shallan. He sat with Yasna for an hour waiting for Shallan before he finally came down looking for her.
And with every passing 5 minutes, Yasna added another insult to the collection.
Maybe, yeah. And Shallan reveals that, yeah, Yasna's here to study the Voidbringers. What can you tell me about them? And he's like, oh, yeah, we don't like to talk about that. We don't talk about Bruno. And she's like, but you're an Ardent, and this is part of your religion. Yeah, but people prefer to hear about the 10 divine attributes or the 10 human failings.
This made me think of Dogma. It's like, look, it's one of those bits about the New Testament we don't like to talk about. When was it Chris Rock's talking about, oh, yeah, Jesus had brothers and sisters.
Yep.
Like, what? Like, yeah, we don't talk about it. It's not in the Bible. Sorry.
Neither is Chris Rock. It's cut out.
And it actually is in the Bible.
I mean, there is like, yeah, like, is it James, brother of?
Yes, Jesus, James, brother of Jesus.
Really?
And there's, yes, and there's also another section in the Bible where it says Mary, his mother, is at a party with his brothers and trying to talk to him.
Oh. Wow, Jesus is too cool to talk to his mom.
Yeah, it's like a whole thing.
He's wow. Busy doing, you know.
He's busy being Christ. What do you want from him?
There's a great song by a Canadian comedy band. The band is called The Arrogant Worms, and the song is called Jesus' Brother Bob. I encourage you to listen to it and listen to the live version. It's fucking hilarious.
Okay.
Yep. Good old Bob.
It's just all about Bob living in the shadow of his brother Jesus.
Yeah, they don't like talking about the Voidbringers because it reflects the failure of Vorinism. We believe they were real. 100 times they came upon mankind, first casting us from the Tranquiline Halls, then trying to destroy us here on Roshar. Forged in damnation with a capital D, so created from hate. She's like, by who? What? Well, who made them? I mean, the Almighty probably didn't create something from hate, right? He's like, okay, it's complicated, but basically the Cosmere has to have balance. The Almighty is really good, so the Cosmere needed Voidbringers as his opposite.
I don't. Okay.
you don't believe in this theology?
No, it doesn't make any sense.
We can chalk this one up to Cab Sol's full of shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the Almighty sound super almighty if
it's
the universe creates an opposing force.
Right. And it's not even that Cab Sol's full of crap. It's that. Like, what he's saying, like just like she says, what you're saying isn't logical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's like, what are we going to do? Call him the some mighty? The part mighty? That doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yeah. Exactly.
The more or less mighty.
More or less mighty.
And, yeah, she's just like, okay, I don't, I, he tries to explain that, like, okay, so the whole thing is, like, men can choose good without creating more evil because we have a dual nature, so that's how the religion encourages people to be good.
I mean, that kind of makes sense, but at the same time, it doesn't know.
And yeah, Shallan's like, okay, that part, fine, but I don't buy your explanation about the Voidbringers.
No. It's a bad explanation.
He says, I thought you were a believer. And she's like, well, yeah, but just because I honor the Almighty doesn't mean that I just accept any explanation. It might be religion, but it still has to make sense.
Yep.
Good job, Shallan. You tell him.
This capsule guy. Yeah,
lawyered, bitch.
Yeah, I'm not even a lawyer. I'm a ward. Warded, bitch.
And so we fought off the Voidbringers 90 and 9 times, led by the heralds and their knights. The 10 orders we called the Knights Radiant. Finally, Ahariadium came, the last desolation, when the Voidbringers were cast back to the Tranquiline Halls, and the heralds followed them to force them out of heaven.
Was Smog there?
So, did the heralds follow them to force them out of heaven? We've seen what we think is the heralds at the beginning of this book. And it doesn't seem like that's what was happening, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't think they understand a lot of their own, like, history. It seems like everybody's gotten confused.
It's 4,000 years ago that it started.
Right. So, you know. To quote Dogma again, it's like, all the pen holders were men.
Actually, all the pen holders were women.
Yeah, here. But being dictated by men.
Maybe, yeah. That's why they have their, like, secret notes that they put in that you never read to the men, where you're allowed to contradict.
Yeah, you contradict the men in the footnotes.
Yeah,
it's like, by the way, this doesn't make any sense. He probably meant this, but he didn't say that. So I just want you to know that I know that that doesn't make sense.
Just imagine this, like, you know, some guy has created the text, like his wife or his secretary or whoever is writing out the thing, adds in this footnote just saying, yeah, this guy's full of shit. That text then goes off to someone else. And, like, this other important guy is like, please read me that text. And then his wife or secretary reads it and, like, reads out the thing and then just starts laughing. He's like, what are you laughing about? Nothing.
Nothing. Don't worry about it. Just thought of a joke that my friend told me earlier.
Yep.
So Capsule thinks that Yasna is researching the Voidbringers in order to disprove Vornism, to prove that this religion is a gigantic fraud. And Shalom's like, I mean, maybe, but that doesn't really sound like her. She doesn't care about, like, convincing other people to believe the same thing she believes. Like, we've encountered this exact thing before, so why would she be wasting her time on that?
Yeah, she goes full neutral planet on that sort of thing. Yeah. It's like, I don't believe it, but I don't care if you do or not. I have no strong feelings one way or the other.
Capsule, on the other hand, has very strong feelings. Like, he starts ranting, and she's like, I've never seen such fury from this guy. Where he's like, haven't we been scourged enough? We're no threat to her. We can't own property. We're property ourselves.
How many jams must I eat?
How many jams must the Capsule eat before you'll call him a man?
A lot more than he's had, I'll tell you that.
Truthberry jam. You gotta eat a lot of truthberry jam so you can speak the truth, you know?
Right.
But she decides to change because it starts becoming an awkward silence after the rant. And she's like, Capsule, I'm leaving. I had news from my family, and I got to go home.
This is like her move. Like, oh, he's about to kiss me. This thing.
Yeah, I can't do
it. Distract you.
Got to go see my brothers. You know, if you want to hook up with me, you'll have to meet them too someday.
Yeah. If you want to hook up with me, gotta meet with my brothers. That didn't work.
Yeah.
And, like, he's like, well, you're coming back though, right? Like, you're not gonna give up on being a ward just because you gotta, you know, run home to your family real quick. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. And even if I do come back, like, Yasna's not gonna be here forever, so she might not be here by the time I'm coming back. And he starts to be like, hey, I mean, I've been spending all this time with you. And the senior Ardens are kind of trying to discourage me, but I could come with you, maybe?
Oh, that's real forward, bro.
Go to Yakaved with you? And I, it says Shallan's panic increased. She barely knew him. And if you leave the Ardentia, you get demoted to the 10th Dawn, almost as low as a Dark Eye, so I can't have that. But what would my brother say if I come back with, like, a virtual stranger? And he's just like, okay, I can see from your expression that I have badly misinterpreted what is happening here. And really, it's like, the more she thinks about it, the more she's like, I mean, I guess I'll miss this guy, but what I'll really miss is, like, the scholarship and stuff. Am I kind of a jerk about that? Like, he seems to really be falling for me. I don't really care about him.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about it. That's a him problem. That's not a you problem.
It's true.
You are allowed to say no.
Yeah, just because the guy's all charming and stuff, you don't have to tell him yes.
And so he's like, well, you'll at least give me a sketch of me? And she's like, yeah, no, yeah, let's go do that. So he's brought the bread and the jam, and he always offers Yasna some of the bread as a peace offering. No jam, though, because she doesn't like jam. Which is such a random thing for Shallan to be like, I love jam. And apparently Yasna's just like, I hate jam. Like, we got some very strong feelings about jam in this group. And we know that Shallan doesn't need you to sit still to draw your picture. She, like, takes a memory and can copy it down whenever. But this conversation has gotten so awkward that she just has him pose and not move and doesn't mention that he doesn't need to do that, because maybe I could just get this over with.
Maybe it just makes him shut up a bit longer.
Oh, that's, yeah. And then he wants another one of the two of them together, and she draws it.
Greedy!
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you and said you wanted a sketch, not like a whole picture book, mate.
Well, he's going to pay for one of them, so, you know.
Yeah, but still, he's altering the deal after they've struck it. Dick move, buddy.
Which, it's a weird thing, because apparently they're not allowed to own property, so his money's not actually his money that he's trying to pay with.
Yeah, she's all like, right, that's God's money, and he's like, take it.
It's like next budgetary meeting among the Ardentians. It's like, okay, so we lost 40 gold pieces this term. Does anyone know what that's about? And Capsule's like, yeah. They look at it. He's just got this wall of sketches. It's like, you spent money on this? Fuck, man. Like, you're worse than that money than that guy who said, oh, all those spheres were worth less than that one dude looking sad.
Yeah. They're all sketches of, like, just him, too. It's like, yeah, why do you need so many sketches of yourself?
Well, or him and a bunch of different women or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's all she would make, and I didn't want her to leave, so, you know.
There's so many pictures of you eating jam out of the jar.
What is wrong with you? In this one, you're scooping it out with your hand like a bear.
Why do you use a spoon?
What? Are you okay, man?
Just this, like, one, it looks like you try to drink it.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I just had a bad time.
I've really, got a really bad jam habit.
How much has he been spending on the jam?
He's like, this isn't even talking about your jam expense. I need it so bad. I got like a 2-jar habit.
2-jar a day.
It's like, wait, what is that? What is that you've got? Is that a straw? No. Are you eating more jam right now?
Maybe. No. I have a problem. I don't know what to do.
Capsule, the jam addict.
Yep. Okay, new headcanon. Yep.
He's like, I've been pouring water in jars just to try to get the last remnants of jam.
Now I want to think Shallan got him hooked. Like, he'd never had jam before until she was like, I like it. And so he's going to, you know, he tries it to impress a girl and get hooked. That's what happens.
Hey, man, that's how you get it. That's, yeah. She's like, I'd like to try this. Oh, would you ever?
You spent 50 emerald spheres on this one, like, 2-ounce jar of jam from Shin. What the hell is wrong with you? It just tasted so good.
It's so delicious. I can't help it.
It has apricots.
Have you ever had an apricot, man? It's magical.
Apricot jam's pretty good.
Yeah.
But while she's drawing the second picture, she's thinking, like, could I maybe just send the Soulcaster back, like, with the boat to my brothers, and I could stay? I mean, that might be better, because it wouldn't be suspicious the way I disappear right when Yasna discovers her Soulcaster doesn't work. And I could, you know, keep doing what I'm loving doing. This is a bad moment to decide this, because she's already told Capsule she's leaving, so that'll be awkward if she does not leave, but it's already awkward, like, with this
dude. I'm sure she could just be like, you know what? I decided after talking with you that I'm going to stay.
Well, that makes it sound like she wants to be with him when she's just established that she doesn't.
But I don't want to be with you. She would say that in the same breath.
Yeah, right.
There you go. Man, I don't know how to tell you, but your jam habit is just turning me off.
It's too much.
Yeah. It's, I thought I could deal with it at first, but it's real bad.
I know. Do you want some jam? Do you want some jam now?
She's like, not helping. I guess.
I mean, I'll hit, sure.
I mean, I'll have some, but...
While she's distracted by these thoughts and drawing, she has drawn more of these line-headed things, dudes, whatever you want to, creatures.
Stormheads.
Stormheads. That sounds like... Sounds like a rock group that has something to do with storms, and these are the fans.
Well, I mean, to be fair, storms are kind of a big deal on this planet.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. No, Stormheads is like the offshoot of this podcast. It's like me and Dak go off on our own and make Stormheads the podcast.
That'd just be chronicling the adventures of the possum hunters.
It's true.
When we were on the cruise, there was a trivia contest that I got into where it was like a Jeopardy sort of thing. One of the categories was like fans of or something like that. And it was just like fans of this music artist are called this. And so they give you the name and you had to say what the artist was. And so there was like Deadheads, which I got because that's the Grateful Dead. That one was easy.
Yeah, that one's easy.
There was Parrotheads.
Is that Jimmy Buffett fans?
It is Jimmy Buffett, which I also knew. I don't know why or how I know that, but
what
I do
the
know.
Fuck? Yeah, it's a thing. I've heard it before. That's the only reason I knew it.
Yeah, and then Swifties was one of them. Oh, yeah. And,
Taylor Swift, clearly.
Beliebers.
Justin Bieber.
And there was one more. I don't remember what it was. But yeah, so that when you said Stormheads, that's why it made me think of that, because I was like, oh, yeah, it's another one of those, you know, Deadheads, Parrotheads.
Yeah. They were really into Deep Purple.
Oh, and the other one was like I think it was Insane Clown Posse. Like they're
Juggalos.
It might have been Juggalos was the last one, yeah.
Yeah. The Juggalos.
And so I think I got all of that category correct.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with the Juggalos.
But yeah, so you guys can go start a rock band and there'll be Stormheads chasing you.
Yeah. Do you play an instrument, Dak?
No, but I like to think I can sing decently.
Sure.
Yeah, you got lead vocals, Joe plays guitar, and drums, actually.
Those might be hard to do at the same time.
Yeah, not at the same time, but...
Yeah, you know, maybe for the record.
How long has it been since you drummed?
Dude, I probably could play guitar better than I drum, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
I drummed in high school, so it's been a long time.
And so, yeah, okay, so she realizes what she's drawn, and destroys the thing again, and she's like, sorry, made a mistake, gotta go. And he's like, hey, but why don't we have some bread and jam and calm down? And says, nope, gotta go. Bye. It's always the jam. He's there for it. And so she like runs off through the middle of, you know, this big building in the center of town. And she stops in the middle of like a crowded area and does another drawing. And there's more of these guys like coming toward her. And so she just runs again. And she like hides in her room and starts drawing. And they're in her room, too. Like there's one reaching out hand just about to, like where the sketch pad is, and she's freaking the fuck out. Like these invisible guys are all around her, but somehow she can see them in her drawings. It's bizarre.
I mean, wouldn't you be?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I can't draw well enough that you could make out if that was happening. But yes, if I was her, probably I would be freaking.
Like it's like a more abstract thing of like when you see something in the mirror that's not there when you turn around.
And so finally, she drops her pencil, and she's in such terror, she reaches out and felt something. That's a whole paragraph, and felt something.
Like the weird abstract thing is like, excuse me, no, don't touch me.
Yeah. And she starts to try to get the soul caster out. She's like, this is the closest thing I have to a weapon, even though I don't know how to use it. And this, she thinks, except storms. I can't use that. I promised myself. She began the process anyway. 10 heartbeats to bring forth the
fruit. What is she talking about?
The proceeds of her most horrific act.
Oh my god. Does she have a shard blade? And if so, how?
And she's interrupted halfway through by a voice that says, what are you?
Who like, are you?
She's like, what am I? I'm terrified. And the voice goes, this is true. Thank you. That was helpful. Thank you.
Yep, you're not wrong.
I'm glad I got a confirmation of my feelings from something I can't see. It was like some disembodied face.
And after that is when things get real weird. The bedroom transforms around her. Everything pops, forming into tiny dark glass spheres. She found herself in a place with a black sky and a strange small white sun that hung on the horizon too far away.
Yeah, this all sounds good. Normal.
Oh, man. what was in that jam?
Yeah. She's like, damn it, Capsule, again.
She falls into an endless dark sea, but not wet. It's made of little beads. An entire ocean of tiny glass spheres.
Sounds like a terrible ball pit.
Yeah, no joke.
And then from nearby, she hears in her mind, you want me to change?
I mean, if that sea was made of nerds' gummy clusters, maybe then we'd have something.
But then you get diabetic sharks, and no one needs diabetic sharks.
Diabetic sharks.
I don't control the diabetic sharks.
So she realizes that the voice is coming from her hand, where she's holding one of the beads. And says, I've been as I am for a great long time. I sleep too much. I will change. Give me what you have. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Help me.
Who are you?
This makes no sense.
And so she feels like cold, as if warmth is being drawn out of her. She screams as the bead flares, and then she drops back on her bed, back in her room. And beside her, the goblet on the nightstand melted into red liquid.
By the way, that red liquid, blood.
Yes, it had changed into blood somehow.
Yeah. My Thisbe's mantle stained with blood. That's for some Shakespeare fans out there.
And so, yeah, when a bunch of blood just appears in your room out of what used to be a goblet, it's also quite disturbing. And she breaks her glass pitcher by accident on the floor. She's freaking out. And she's like, I soul casted somehow. I changed that goblet into blood, which is one of the 10 essences. But I wasn't even touching the soul caster. How did I do it? Did it have something to do with those creatures? And then Yasna's outside her room like, Shallan, what was that noise, Shallan? And she's like, oh, shit. How am I going to explain this? I got a sketch pad filled with pictures of those creatures. And if they do have something to do with soul casting, Yasna will recognize them. And then that'll be bad. How do I explain how my room is now covered in blood all over the floor when no one is injured here?
Oh, Shallan, you caught me in the middle of my annual goat sacrifice. So where's the goat spot?
You mean Yasna.
Yeah. Yasna, you caught me in the middle of my goat sacrifice. Uh-huh. That explains the blood. But where's the carcass of the goat?
I threw it out the window. There's no windows. We've established that.
Yeah, they're underground, right? That's what Yasna says. Like, Shallan, you don't have any windows. I flushed it down the toilet.
The window in my mind.
Yeah. What's a toilet?
Yeah, we saw Dalinar digging a big latrine, so, you know.
Yeah, this is a real pickle.
She's going to stuff a goat body into a chamber pot.
Yeah. Yasna's like, what are you talking about? And finally Shallan's like, oh, Yasna, what a mess. I don't know.
There was something in that jam. I can't explain it.
That Capsule guy. You were right. I should have stayed away from him.
It's all Capsule's fault.
It's Capsule's fault. It's his blood.
Wait, what?
I don't know that I could come up with the plan that Shallan does. I feel like if I'm Shallan at this point, this is where I do what Joe's kind of been suggesting. I think it's at points where it's just like, just ask Yasna for help. Like, we've gone too far down this freaky road for you to try to keep going on your own at this point.
Yeah.
But Shallan, in her panic, comes up with an idea to take a shard of broken glass and cut herself and then fall down and pretend to be unconscious when Yasna comes in. Which she does. And Yasna calls for help, and Shallan just thinks, this is not going to end well. And that's the end of our chapters. So, pretty dramatic moment for Shallan. She somehow soul casted a goblet into blood, and then she pretends like she was trying to commit suicide, I assume is what we're going for here. Maybe she's trying to make it look like an accident, but it'd be hard to make it look like an accident, I feel like.
Well, yeah, it's a spur of the moment, desperation kind of thing, so what are you going to do?
So, predicaments. Where are we going? What's going to happen from here? Remember,
oh boy.
We've now got her, theoretically at least, looking to Yasna like she's attempted suicide. But also, she's supposed to leave town tomorrow with the Soulcaster. So, where are we going?
Gosh, it's like every time I feel like I've got maybe some kind of clue in this book, it just takes another turn, like, in a direction I'm not expecting. So, like, I don't know where we are. I don't know what's going on. I guess I would have to say, like, Shallan will find a way to spin this into her staying. I mean, my guess, if I had to guess based on what we know about Yasna, is that like somehow Yasna's gonna figure out that wasn't her blood, and if that's the case, then she's gonna figure out like she soul cast that blood, because
Soulcast blood has this specific property about it that other type of bloods don't. Because I would assume if you're soul casting a blood, right, like it's not like normal people blood, because that, how would it be, like whose blood would it be? It's like whose blood?
Some guys. Exactly. Like it doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, I feel like she's going to get found out anyway. And maybe she will just finally break down and ask Yasna for help. I hope she does, because, I mean, come on. This is crazy.
Yeah, she fell into some weird place with a black sky and a white sun and a bead ocean. Like,
oh, yeah.
A little all over your stuff, head at this point, girl.
Yeah, all that stuff. Who knows? But yeah, like, and then she has some other kind of power that, like, she was trying to tap into. Like, does she have a shard blade? Like, what's going on? It's very confusing.
So yeah, no, you got some good points. It is confusing. That is exactly, yeah. All right, I can't say it any better than you did.
Yeah, well, and like I said, like I feel like I don't have enough information to make like an assessment of what's gonna happen next. Like I just don't. Every time I think I've got a handle on, I'm like, she's gonna do this. She just doesn't, and it gets weirder. It doesn't get like, doesn't make more sense. It makes less sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in a similar boat. I'm just like, okay. There's going to be a lot of questions about this for Shallan. My immediate thought jumped to, all right, if she passes out, like, I mean, she's pretending to be injured, but I feel like if she's cut herself open, she could easily pass out for real. And then I feel like, you know, she's, by the time she wakes up, her ship will have sailed, quite literally, because like, all right, well, she's in the hospital. We can't really wait around. I know, like, they're all eager to help her and everything, but it's like, she could die, guys. Like, we've got shit to do. If she wakes up and she's fine, we'll pick her up on the next pass. So, yeah, I think she's going to be cornered by Yasna and... Yep. Oh, where was I going with this? Yeah, I think her situation is going to be even more precarious. I think she's going to double down on not telling Yasna that she took the Soulcaster, but that's... not exactly going to work out in her favor, but she's going to be stuck there and she won't be able to get away. So, yeah, that's what I have for that. The only other thing I had was just a little minor thing from elsewhere. It talked about how when they were talking about what Gavilar was talking about with the Parshendi and how they were hunting the chasm, like, you know, they worship the chasm fiends. I've had a thing for a while. It's like, all right, if the chasm fiends are going into the Crystallis, what comes out? Yeah. And I think so. Part of the reason that we're having this war is because the Alethi keep killing the Crystallises before they can hatch. And that's why the Parshendi are so mad. So there's actually a level above the chasm fiends, an even bigger one, which is that picture we saw earlier in the book, the giant thing standing over. And whether they know it or not, like people the reason the Parshendi are so pissed is because they want more of these giant gods to come out of their chrysalises and maybe other people first, but now the Alethi are the ones who just keep killing them. And I think the Shard, like if it's Odium or whoever, is directing that to happen because, I don't know, maybe these giant chasm fiends can oppose him somehow. Who knows?
Hmm.
But yeah, I think I'm doubling down on that is the bigger thing from the picture is like what the chasm fiends turn into.
That's interesting. Because, we don't know, like you said, we haven't seen one come out of one of those before. And you brought it up when we saw them before, because it was just like, well, what happens after that? Are they just bigger? Are they something completely, do they turn into chasm butterflies? Like, what are we doing? So, that's an interesting possibility.
Yeah. Got to see what the crabs turn into.
Very important. Got to know what crabs turn into, obviously.
Yeah.
So, but... yeah, no, okay. It's still, the thing is, we still have so little that we know about, like, why the Parshendi do anything that they do.
Yeah.
That it's almost hard to say that one theory is any better than another, because we have so little information about them, their culture, their beliefs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And we need more info on them in general. So, yeah. Still sort of hoping that maybe when the Kaladin prison break happens, they encounter the Parshendi. I think I predicted way back when that maybe Kaladin would get swept up with them. So we live in hope.
Mm-hmm. It can still happen, yeah.
Maybe the Parshendi will gut Moash for us.
Like, Marsh really hasn't done anything particularly bad, but you're like, I hope that guy dies.
I know, but it's just funny at this point to keep on that train. It's like with Spook.
Spook never did anything that bad. He was just a creepy stalker dude.
Don't say that. Don't ever say that. He never did anything that bad.
All right. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. Jamie's got to give us some thoughts when she comes back next time on, because like I feel like these are two chapters Jamie would have had some stuff to say about. We'll try to revisit, briefly next time. But in the meantime,
I have to brief her on Cab Sal's crippling jam addiction.
Yeah, exactly. Very important that she understand. In the meantime, we have a bunch of emails. We got one new patron. So let's do that stuff. Let me bring up our new patron first. Joking.
I'm ready.
So we have a new Ska level backer whose name is, let me see, Hydro Snow Stormlock.
Hydro Snow Stormlock. Wow. That's a mouthful. Hydro Snow
that's Stormlock. Impressive.
Yeah. That is impressive. You store energy. You're a subsumer.
Yeah. Energetic. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, new patrons. I just got back a couple days ago, but I've already edited for posting one more episode of my reading of Defiant. So if you're interested in hearing my reaction as I was reading that for the first time, that is what's currently going up on the Patreon. Is that I think after that I may do this this little book that came with the final box from the Year of Sanderson. So that's what's going on our Patreon. If you've got any interest, you can go check that out.
I also got that box.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, you bought the box.
Yeah, because I wanted the Kelsier pin, and then it came with the Brandon pin, and then it had the other stuff, and I was like, I guess I'll just get the box.
A little book. It's a very small book, but it looks cool. I like the look of it.
Yeah. If Dak and Jamie want the pins, they are individually being sold on the website.
Are they now? Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they sold out at first, but they may have been reposted, because I joined a... Sanderson Collectors Guild Discord, and so lots of I'm now getting lots of interesting information about various collectible books and other merchandise having to do with Brandon.
Interesting. Fun stuff. I'll have a look and see. Probably have to buy them in bulk, because otherwise shipping costs will absolutely murder us if we buy them individually.
Anyway, back to what we're doing. We have emails. Several emails because we were gone for 2 weeks, so they built up some. The first one is from Derek. And Derek says, "The Sanderlanch rocks. I finally made my way over to your podcast, listening from the mountains of central Appalachia, and loved your take on Mistborn Era 1, wild predicaments and all. I've been going through at a rapid clip, rereading along for the most part, and currently a bit less than 2 years behind at the start of Alloy of Law. A few thoughts that came up from Elantris and Alloy of Law. Seons are already being compared to cell phones in the first episode of Elantris, and yet no one made the obvious joke about when they heard the planet name, Cell.
Damn.
Seons are SEL phones.
I get it.
Dak making the leap between Marsh and Death. The quote is, Marsh is the Grim Reaper? Awesome. I've been waiting for someone to get that since I first heard Take It Back, music by Miracle Sound, in the HOA intro, when the Reaper comes to ground. Just brings an image of Marsh dropping menacingly from the sky, like the villain in an anime intro. Are they Reapers in Mass Effect? Or Reavers?
Yes. Okay. They are Reapers.
Okay, so then, yeah, that does fit. I don't play Mass Effect, so.
Reavers is, Serenity. Serenity. Yeah.
It's probably in other places, too.
Sure.
I mean, it could be. Reavers are also a big part of X-Men.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't wait to hear the rest of Era 2, though I'll need to find a copy of The Lost Metal before I get there. Oh, by the way, I already know where I would fit on Skadriel. I weave chainmail / scale mail, mostly with aluminum, and pour a little of myself into every piece that I make. I'm a true mind. Thank you, and wuzzing to the time of next, Colo from Derek.
Naming yourself, that does not count. I'm sorry. You have to be on the Patreon. Sorry about it.
Oh, that's a pretty cool thing to make your own
chainmail. Yeah, that is pretty cool. Impressive.
Yeah. Good on you. Thank you for the email. Our next email comes from Tyler. It says, my first email. Hello, I've been binging on the Sanderlanch, and yours is easily my favorite Cosmere podcast I've listened to. I had been listening to another one that originally went through Stormlight Archive and has now moved on to Mistborn, but was not connecting with those hosts as much as I would have liked. Among other things, it seemed like they were avoiding any discussion of LGBT topics when they were alluded to or mentioned in the books. It might be that they just wanted to focus on other things, but it felt a little too intentional to me. Pause there to be like, I don't know how much we get into discussions of that. I don't know that we are avoiding it, but...
I don't think we've shied away from it if it's warranted.
Although, on that note, there's an interesting thing about this book in that if you go back and read how Shallan talks about Yasna, after the book came out, somebody asked Brandon, like, so is Shallan, like, bi? She seems kind of into Yasna because she's talking about how, like, beautiful she is and she, like, is her bathing attendant later on and stuff. And Brandon, like, thinks about this question. And he's like, that wasn't something I intended. But no, I can kind of see where you're coming from on that. So something to think about as we read more is look for that that vibe.
Yeah, I guess I can see it, but it wouldn't have occurred to me.
I mean, when you go back and especially if you reread when she first meets Yasna, she goes on for like a page about how beautiful Yasna is.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't really go on. I guess we're in her head, so we kind of hear her thoughts about it. But anyway.
She's the first one that's also describing Yasna as a character, like the first one in world describing her. So you're going to get, you know, some kind of description. And also, you know, hetero women can admire other hetero women's beauty.
Also true. Yeah. You know, you don't want to try to claim that that's not the thing they could be doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, just one of the other podcasts I listened to was talking about that recently, and I realized I hadn't mentioned that. Tyler goes on, I ended up looking for another podcast with a similar format, a Sanderson Sherpa guiding new readers through the books. I sampled the few I found and chose yours because the four of you were instantly likable from episode one. After listening to the first 109 episodes, I finally decided to write in an email and join your Patreon to express my appreciation. Thanks.
How many of these types of podcasts specifically for Sanderson are there?
I can think of at least three others off the top of my head. I'm sure there's more.
Oh, okay.
Although, now that I think about it, one of them that I was thinking about is called My Sister Made Me View It, which is actually like this woman's sister is like making her, and I haven't listened to this one, but I've heard a lot about it. Like, I think it started with movies, making her watch movies or shows that she hadn't seen and they would talk about them. They've moved into Sanderson at some point. And so more recently, that has been a big thing they've been doing, but they're not exclusively that, I guess.
Right. Fair enough.
I've meant to go and check that one out because I've heard good things about it. I really appreciate the great decisions Data has made for the podcast regarding the reading order, the format, and the way he responds when the group throws out their theories. Like when they started to suspect Marisai of being a bad guy, and Data said something to the effect of, yeah, that would be interesting, an unassuming girl that is secretly evil. I could be wrong, but I figured that was a little nod to Telson, which they wouldn't know about until later in the series. I don't know that it was, but I could see that.
As soon as Telson did show up, we're just like, oh, fucking bad guy right there.
Yeah, you guys... almost from the moment she came on page, we're like, okay, yeah, she's shady.
Yeah.
She's not great.
One recent, for me, specific thing I appreciate from you guys is the way you brought up Steris's autism and grew to appreciate her character. It's interesting because the way that Wayne's gut instinct had led him to unfairly dislike Steris is something that people on the spectrum frequently deal with, and it was great to hear you guys touch on that. All four of you are the best. I love the enthusiasm, the analysis and theorizing, and the honesty when you have something to critique. And the Futurama references are a staple of the pod that I will never get tired of. Dak, Jamie, Joe, and Data, thank you for the incredible podcast. Sincerely, Tyler. Well, thank you for your very fun email. I appreciate that we were likable from episode one. I don't feel that way about myself. And Joe is often talking about how unlikable he is. But
yeah, it's pretty true. I'm awful.
Just earlier in this very episode, he's like, I'm pretty great. Everyone loves me.
You know, it's a roller coaster of emotions with me.
It is. That's very accurate description.
That's all right. Okay. You got that. I'm just an idiot.
So the next email is from someone who's emailed us before, and Zhuao, I think was the pronunciation. This person actually sent a YouTube link the last time with a video for how to say this correctly. And so I'm trying to base it back to that. But Joao says, catching up, minis and favorite fruits. Hey everyone, how's it going? Joao here again, and I've already zoomed through part 3. Technically, I'm ahead of the game this time around. Sorry for not keeping in step. Nonetheless, I'll keep tuning in for the banter and Data's data. Speaking of Data, I'm curious if you're interested in showing some of the Brotherwise minis. A friend sent me some pictures of ones that won't spoil anything, like Dalinar, Chasm Fiend, Alethi, and Parshendi troops. The website has HD images of all of them, and I remember Brandon mentioning these were the official versions of the characters. So,
We saw there those at the con back.
We did see several years ago, right? Con, yeah. You probably wouldn't, since they're Stormlight minis, you probably wouldn't have recognized any of them necessarily, but yeah. And since then, they had a Kickstarter campaign for these minis, and there were a bunch of them. And so, yeah, I might share some of those with you guys. There's I sent you pictures. I backed for the larger, already colored ones because I'm not a person who wants to get in there and do the detailed coloring on the minifigures. And so I think I showed you guys pictures of Adolin's figure because that was one that wouldn't spoil anything for you guys. And so I might look at some of the other ones to show you so you can get an idea of these official depictions. They go on to say, oh, there's something else I recalled from Brandon. It popped into my head when Dalit was mentioned and Dak couldn't remember him. Apparently, the first chapter of the book was originally written as a third prologue, but Brandon labeled it as chapter one to avoid scaring new readers. Same logic with calling the first prologue the prelude, I think. I know this email is getting lengthy, my apologies, but the banana question from one of the previous episodes got me thinking. What are your top three fruits? Mine would have to be pineapple, banana, and mango. Thanks all for now. Take care. Catch you later. So, what are your top three fruits, guys?
I guess apples and grapes and mangoes? Yes.
It's hard to we really can't get good mango here. So I don't really eat mango. So I guess my top three fruits would have to be apples, bananas, and what's another fruit I really enjoy? I mean, I'll eat grapes. They're not my favorite. Mm-hmm. Strawberries, maybe, if you count strawberries as a fruit.
Yeah. That's in my top three, so I'm going to count it, yes. But
I actually
strongly dislike mangoes, so that would
not be that's fair.
For me, it'd probably pineapple, strawberries, and grapes. Pineapple's my favorite. The fruit that eats you back.
Ooh, yeah, I do like pineapple. That's a good point.
Pineapple's good. I got to be in the mood for it, though.
They mentioned that they're at the end of part three, so they're ahead of the game. I was going to bring up, the next episode is going to be two chapters again. The one after that will be six chapters and will bring us through the end of part three of this book. We are 65% of the way. So we're about 2/3 of the way through this book after the chapters that we read for today. So, we're going to get the next episode will be chapters 46 and 47. And then after that will be 48 through 51 to bring us the end of part three. And then the first two interludes again, which is going to once again leave us to start the Seth interlude with the following episode.
Yay!
Because that'll be the third interlude of that section once again. But yeah, so there's five parts of the book, and honestly, part five is quite small. So we are we're approaching the denouement, as it were. Thank you for the email. We have. Do you want to do this last one? No, I'll save the last one for next time. So, like I said, for next time, two more chapters. We're going to do 46 and 47 before we jump into like that much bigger section or much higher number of chapters section. It's not actually that much bigger. Music by Miracle of Sound. Put that in there while I'm thinking about it. If you'd like to send us an email like these folks did, the address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram and X and Facebook, and already brought up the Patreon and what you can find there. So check out all that stuff if you're interested. Thank you, everybody. All of our, all you listeners, all the patrons, people on our Discord. If you want to join the Discord, there's a link at our website, www.thesanderlanch.com. You guys are all awesome. We appreciate you. Two chapters for next time. And wasing to the time of next. Holo? Kies Fasher. Crab at thee!
Getting longer and longer.
I was thinking about like switching out the crab part with like wasn't to the time of next air sick lowlanders, because somebody put that in like their email signature, and I was like, oh, that's actually not a bad one that we could use, that thing that Rock said. But I don't know, Not yet, anyway.